Think of a time when you experienced a conversation that left you with a new perspective, or perhaps an inquiry, or you might have felt that something has shifted in you after that conversation. Maybe it helped you gain a new level of clarity, or moved you to take action. That was a coaching conversation. Hello and welcome to the Coaching Conversation Podcast. This is your host, Salah Alethi, and I'm here today with Dan Brown. I met Dan at the Washington Improv Theater, where I took a couple of improv classes. Dan also teaches and coaches improv through his company, Reflex Improv. Pretty cool name, if you ask me. And, you know, the tagline is make a scene. Welcome, Dan.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So you ready to make a scene?
Yeah, definitely.
So how do you make a scene?
Basically, it's just saying or doing something to get things started. That's the biggest part of improv. And it's also the biggest hurdle at the beginning when people are starting to learn it, is to understand that no matter what you say or what you do, it's correct.
I think that's one of the biggest things in improv. And I you know, this podcast is really about like coaching conversation, but I see a lot of parallels between coaching and improv, because usually the start of a scene is between two people.
Yes.
Yeah. So what brought you to improv? Like, how did you get there?
I did some of what I was calling improv when I was in college. I was on the improv troupe. I was on the sketch troupe. And I really enjoyed it, but we were doing like games we kind of hijacked from Whose Line Is It Anyway? You know, the little short form games. And I enjoyed it. I never felt like I was great at it. And so I just kind of went away from it for a long time. And then I got back involved. It was almost a decade ago. I'd been living in Northern Virginia, and I took a job up at Walter Reed and moved up that way. Didn't know anybody up there and decided, well, I need to make some friends. So I decided to take an improv class, and I was already on Washington Improv Theater's mailing list for a while. Had seen some shows with them. And that's when I first learned about actually how to do improv rather than just being funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good, it's a good point here. Like, most people think that improv is about being funny. And, you know, what I learned, you know, with you and other improvisers, is not about being funny. Like, what's it about?
It's mainly about communication. It's about listening, agreeing, and responding. We talk about yes and a huge amount in improv. That's really the main building block with improv. And I'd say in the last couple of years, my understanding of yes and has shifted a little bit. It's gone from being agree with whatever the other person said to now I've changed it to be, it doesn't necessarily mean you agree with the other person or that they're correct. But what it does mean is that I've heard you, and I'm going to honor what you've brought to the scene by adding my own piece to it. And I think that changed the way I looked at improv, changed the way I looked at the whole dynamic in a way that was very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is this concept, or I guess that the core of improv, the yes and, right? You mentioned that, you know, you don't have to agree with the person, but you basically acknowledge that what they're saying and then build on that. How has that changed the way that you have conversations with people?
Well, I think that has always been in the back of my mind all the time, especially like if you're in a business meeting with somebody, if you're in a like a group collaboration meeting. And typically what ends up happening is you have a couple of people that dominate and then other people that get shut down all the time. And then after a while, the people that get shut down all the time stop contributing because they get frustrated. Oh, no one ever listens to me. And maybe sometimes they have the good idea, but if they've already shut down, then you're never going to hear it. So what the yes and approach does is it hears everything. It listens to everything. It gives everybody a voice in what's going on. And I don't expect my idea to be the one that everybody goes with, but it does mean a lot to myself. It means a lot to other people when they know that their idea has been heard and has been considered, even if it's not the one that ultimately moves forward.
Yeah. I think one of the games that I played with the you know other improvisers is just like, you know, how to get to yes and. Is it and you kind of you know facilitated this, you know, when you say no to every idea, then you stop getting ideas.
Yeah, it shuts things down completely. And it I equate it to a Roomba, like the vacuum, the robot rat vacuum. When it hits a wall, it stops and it has to back up and find another way to go. Yes and keeps things moving forward. constantly. Maybe not always usefully, but it does move forward all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I find it especially useful, you know, at least when you're trying to come up with new ideas and just get out of the having too much restrictions or constraints on the ideas, like, you know, just the flow of ideas need to have some sort of safety, right?
Right. I think in, especially when brainstorming, it's good to have like maybe a chunk of time set aside just to have a kind of wide open and go for the yes and then maybe after a period of time, then shut things down and go, okay, what's the things that we can actually, you know, move forward on? But I do think it's very useful.
Yeah. So most of the time people start to say yes, and then they follow it with but, and then that defeats the purpose of hearing the idea. What's a good way to practice or help get to that yes and?
First of all, avoiding the word but is almost a no word. I think that same exercise, I throw in a yes, but, and it's almost as much of a stopping point for people. And I kind of joke that if anybody gives you an apology for something they did and then they throw a but in there, it's means that they're justifying what they did. You know, I'm sorry about that, but blah, blah, blah. So I've started telling people that if you catch yourself starting to say the word but, to then change it really quickly to the word because. Because is a very good word for improv because it justifies things. It gives purpose to things that are sometimes crazy that come up in improv scenes. And if you can justify it and you could say, oh yeah, this is this way. Yes, because, you can find a lot more open road again. It's almost an and word.
Yeah. It's again, that keeps the flow going. Cause I think, you know, there's another concept about making your scene partner looks good, which it kind of translates also to your team members and organizations where you are trying to make your team look good. Right. And if everyone has that mindset, then everyone becomes better.
Yeah. Everybody's lifted up. If we have the tradition before we do big shows or before we do major scenes, and you'll go around to everybody in the troupe and you'll pat them on the back gently. Can't do it currently because of social distancing, but we do it virtually still. And you tap everybody on the back and you say, got your back, got your back, got your back. And what that means is that when I'm on the stage with you, my job, I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about making you look great. And you're not worried about yourself. You're worried about making me look great. And through that, everybody gets lifted up. And it's a we experience rather than a me experience.
Yeah. So you mentioned something about like now with the social distancing and remote, how has that impacted the way that you do improv?
It's, well, all of it is online currently. Making plans for things is, hopefully things will open up in the next several weeks, maybe a couple of months, to do things in person again. And we're coming up with very specific ways to move forward on that. But for now, we're doing classes pretty much every weeknight over Zoom video. Mm-hmm. And we've had groups from anywhere from 6 to I think we had 21 for one of our groups recently. And at first I was like, I don't know how this is going to work. I don't know if this is going to work, but I knew that I had to try. We had built up some really good momentum over the last year and I didn't want to lose that momentum. So we just decided to go for it. And yes, and any obstacles that came in the way. The first obstacle that happened was improv has eye contact normally. You know, you communicate, we're in the same room with each other. I can say a lot through just looking you in the eye and kind of nodding, and then you nod back and we realize, okay, we're on the same page with this. You lose that with the Zoom video, but we found little shortcuts around that. Like instead of worrying about creating character names in scenes, we're just going with our real names. You can still play a character in a scene, but your character's name, Salah. My character's name is Dan, but they could still be characters. So that makes the communication really clear as to who I'm starting the scene with. So that's one, that was the first thing that came in that helped immensely. The other thing is yes anding any obstacles. Occasionally Zoom will cut out somebody. You won't hear exactly what's said by the other person if you have a glitch for that moment. So instead of letting it shut things down, we just in character will ask for clarification on that. Occasionally we'll just take what we thought we heard and it'll end up being a mistake, but mistakes are fun. Mistakes lead to opportunities. So we found just little tricks that have moved things forward. I don't know that it's a great platform for audiences to watch improv, but I do know that it's been a very satisfactory, very enjoyable, and very connecting platform for people to participate in improv. And I've been very happy with how that's worked out.
Yeah, no, I joined a couple of sessions with you, and I thought, you know, there is a lot of connection. The games bring the people together in a meeting, and you use the same concept of like, yes, and, you know, in the face of challenges. So this seems to be a kind of a philosophy, just not specific to improv, but you can apply it in other aspects of life.
Exactly. It removes barriers. So we just decided when we find a barrier, or we're going to find a way around it.
Yeah, so one of the improv games, there is a lot of improv games that bring people present. And that's really one of the challenges right now, is like everyone is trying to figure out what is, you know, to know, you know, there is a need to know things that may not be known right now. And so everyone has a lot on their mind. So what are some games that you've used to bring people present when they join a session?
One of the first things we do often have new people join. We've ended up on an email list somewhere or a Facebook list somewhere that's bringing in people from around the country and I think even around the world. We have a regular now that comes from California. Most of our people are the people we meet with in person here when we have our in-person classes. But we've had new people several times pop in. And so just having about a 5-minute period of a name game where we do a physical motion, something that can fit within a Zoom screen. And we put a word, it could be an adjective or an animal, and then we give our name. And through that, we learn each other's names. Now we can cheat on Zoom because, you know, you just hover over the person's name. And unless they got something weird typed in, you'll know who they are. But I think there's just something to having people acknowledged and present and everybody know each other's names off the top of their head without having to look. I think that's important. We also start off, this is true in person, I try to start off with something that gets people off the top of their head, not thinking, just reacting. That's actually where the name Reflex came from. It was just about reacting. And so we do games like five things where I'll give you a topic and you have to list five things as quick as you can. And you don't worry about being correct. You just worry about saying it. And then there's another one we've done, product pitch, where, you know, do an average everyday product like a spatula. And people have to give reasons why people might buy that. Some of them are serious. Some of them are silly. We might have, you know, I think somebody said, it scrapes gum off the floor, you know, and then everybody has to say yes after each one. And that's another one to get people off the top of their head. Just things that get people out of their head for a little bit, because I know all of us are in our heads a lot right now. We have a lot of spare time right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, so that's one of the reasons I joined improv, at least, you know, took a couple of classes, was to be more present, be more in the moment, get out of my head, you know, not overthink, which tends to be a problem with many. You know, have you experienced that? And what, you know, how did that work?
Well, I have a long history of anxiety and social anxiety, and to pretty much every anxiety that there is, I probably have it. And I've realized how much this has helped me, you know, help my brain to rewire a little bit. It hasn't cured it, but almost a year ago, I had a pair of events happen where one was, we do classes in Annapolis, Maryland. There's an art studio there that we partner with. We use their space. They had just opened their new space and it was packed with like probably 100, 120 people in the space. And I only knew the owner and I didn't know anybody else. And I could have been there to promote, because we do improv classes there. I could have been there to do that. But I had an anxiety attack that night and I had just the little script in my head. I don't know what to say. I don't know who to talk to. Just kind of started running through my head and I was getting more and more anxious about it. And I ended up taking off a little bit early. I apologized to the owner and just said, you know, I got to head out. And then the next day I had another event that had a lot of people involved and also had an anxiety attack that day. So I was just having a bad weekend. And then I realized the next day, okay, this was a bad weekend. And I was upset with myself because, you know, I haven't had these in a while. And then that triggered in me. I'm like, wait a minute, I haven't had these in a while. In fact, it's probably been about 3 or 4 years since I've had an attack this bad. And so even though it was bad that weekend, I realized how much improv had helped rewire my brain to where it wasn't a normal occurrence anymore. And I became very thankful for that. You know, okay, yeah, this was a bad day, but you know what? I've been spared of it for quite a while. And that wasn't the case before. It was pretty much every week and sometimes every day that I was getting hit with attacks like this. So something in the wiring of my brain changed because of both doing improv and teaching improv that I'm very thankful for. And I'll still have attacks probably every once in a while like that, but it has absolutely helped.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things that I've been trying to work on is like how to just get out of the overthinking mode. And you know, like you said, when you get into overthinking or start to think, you freeze and you start to get anxious.
Yeah, you start having that script go through your head, like, oh, I'm not going to get through this. I'm not going to be good at this. You know, all the little internal dialogue, that negative internal dialogue that we have, right. And that may be the time to play. You know, take a break. Let's play.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually in coaching they call this like inner critics or saboteurs, and you know, all the gremlins, a lot of different names for the thoughts that come through your head when you're about to do something and you don't know if it's going to work. So it's again this concept of yes and, not just to the scene partner that you're working with, or if you're coaching someone you're working with, it's also to yourself. Like,
yeah. I think more than anything else, I mean, I've taken a ton of lessons from improv, but I think the biggest is being okay with failing, because scenes don't work all the time, and that's okay. I've started jokingly referring to bad scenes as the sacrifice to the improv gods. So when I have a terrible scene, I used to beat myself up over it. I'd be like, oh, that was so bad. I can't believe how bad that was. I'm not a good improviser. And now I laugh about it and I'm going, oh, that was bad. And guess what? There's going to be a good one later. So I think there's a sacrifice for when you have that amazing lightning in a bottle moment that you're eventually going to have as well. So I consider those a sacrifice to that now. And so when I have a bad scene, I'm just like, okay, good. I'm going to have a good scene later on because I had this bad scene.
If I remember, or the term that I learned in the improv is like this wipe, right? So wiping a scene.
Yeah.
When something is not really going well or taking, people are stuck. So, you know, wiping that scene can just be a relief for improvisers to start again, right? To like go, okay, that was okay, but let's do this again.
Exactly. You know, you rescue your, that's having their back. You rescue your troop mates if they're in a bad scene. If they're out there for 30 seconds, 45 seconds, a minute, it's not gaining traction. That happens occasionally. And so you wipe it and move on to the next thing. And part of your brain is like, oh, I want to give them a little more time. Maybe they can fix this. But actually, you want to go ahead and move on to the next thing, and they'll thank you for it most of the time.
Yeah, so it's a lot of games that or practices in improv that helps almost work around this overthinking or create this safety for, you know, for people to come up with good ideas, because no bad ideas, you know, there are no mistakes in improv, and that creates safety for people to try again.
Yeah, I think there's just ideas that haven't been pursued long enough. Even a bad idea, if you keep yes-anding it, you can find a kernel of gold in there somewhere if you keep digging long enough. So following bad ideas can sometimes lead to ideas that you would never consider before that end up being great.
Yeah, I think that's, again, the yes-and seems to be at the core of this. And so some of the coaching conversation I've had in the past have been, people want to do something, but they don't know how it's going to pan out. So they don't try it, and they never know if it was a good idea or not. So it's almost like you have to put out bad ideas in order to find a good idea, right? And that's what the scene, like exactly what you were referring to.
And sometimes you just need to start it, even if things aren't perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that me starting Reflex, I was probably at a low point in life, had some, you know, just frustrated. I had been talking about doing this for a while. I taught in DC. I live in Fairfax. And people would ask what I do. I was like, well, I do graphic design and web design. And then I also teach improv on the side. And they always perked up at the improv part. Oh, I'd love to do that. I don't want to drive into the city. And I'm like, oh, there's, you know, probably a million something people outside the Beltway living. So why aren't we doing classes out here? So that's where the start for that came from. And I kept waiting for everything to line up, like finances to be perfect and have the right location. And I just ended up in a bad situation it was April of 2016, and it was just, everything was just going badly that month. And I just kind of said, screw it, let's just do it and see what we can make happen. And I found a cheap space in a church basement, and just put it out there on Facebook and got four people to sign up, and which ideally you want like 10, but four can be done, and got started. And it wasn't perfect, but later that year, we got a second class going. We had like, I think, 8 people for that class. And then later that year, we had another class and we had more. And we just finished right before coronavirus shut everything down. With all the different classes we have going on, and I have a few different teachers as well, we had something like 81 people, I think, is the number that I counted up of different people that were involved in one of our classes through the week. And somebody reminded me, you started with 4. Yeah. I was like, okay, yeah, we're doing all right.
Yeah, yeah, so that...
I had to start the scene. You know, I had to get it started, and then the rest of it kind of figured itself out.
Yeah, and then there's, I was going to say, like, the other thing when you start the scene, you know, sometimes you have an idea in mind, and then it just, you know, the scene partners say something different, and it goes into, you know, completely different direction. So that's,
you can't control it. That's right. That's the hardest lesson, especially for people that come from a stand-up background, if they're used to writing their comedy. They want to come in with an entire storyline, and you have to let that go. The storyline goes where it goes. You can't control it. You just have to listen and respond. And sometimes people, that's in early improv, that's one of the biggest obstacles that some people have, is they want to control the scene. You know, they want to send it in this direction when, no, it's kind of meandering. You're kind of following each other. So you don't know exactly where it's going to go. That's also where the surprises come in.
Yeah. And they are very, it can be like magical sometimes. Like, you know, there are, you know, this game of like word association that you start with one word and like goes around and then comes back to the, like, almost to lands in the same place again. You know, so you can control it, but it's like there is an arc or a flow that happens to get, you know, to get to that landing.
Right. And during that game, which is called Three Leaf Over. And so the idea is, like, if we started off with the word dog, we would do a word association, go away from dog, but eventually we're going to say dog again. What's been very fascinating for me during that is all the other little patterns that emerge while you're kind of meandering a little bit until you eventually come back to dog organically. You'll have several other words that come up many times, or many themes that will come up. And it's very interesting where those kind of land each time. And I think it's a very strong brainstorming technique.
Yeah.
You find the things that everybody has in common.
Yeah. I find that also, like, you know, with coaching conversations, that, you know, you look for values that keep coming up all the time. Like, you know, someone say something and then they keep saying the same thing in different ways, but it's tying back to that same value that they want to honor. So it's interesting how there is a lot of similarities in the two worlds, you know, because again, like, these, like, coaching conversations, usually there's maybe some ideas around, like, what is it that a person want to bring to that session, but then sometimes it goes into a completely different direction, and then there is, you kind of have to go with it, and then it lands back to where it was originally intended at some point. So very interesting that this idea of, like, the yes and is something that can be applicable to many different areas.
And again, I think there are times that it's appropriate to do it, and then there are other times that, yeah, it's probably not going to be helpful once you know the direction you're going in, but this is a good tool to get you going in that direction. It's been a few years since I've done one, but we have participated in the 48-hour film project a couple of times. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It's basically where, but many teams sign up for this, and you get a prompt and a prop and a line of dialogue and a character name, and they give you a genre, and then you have 2 days to write, direct, edit, and all that, I think 5 to 7 minute film. And then you turn it back in and you compete with others. And we always started off with teams of improvisers, and while what we filmed was scripted, we came up with the script through just people doing improv for about an hour or two at the very start, and finding ideas through that, things that maybe we wouldn't have had come up in like a typical writer's room type brainstorming, where you're just throwing ideas out. In this case, we're playing them out. We're actually doing the scenes. And then people are writing, you know, anybody that's not in the scenes are writing out notes. Okay, I like that. I like that. And then we took the best ideas from that and kind of merged them all together into one script that we ended up going out and shooting. And so I think it's very useful for that type of brainstorming.
Yeah.
But once you get to the part where you know where you're going, then you got to stick to the script after that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there are different types of improv. So you've done a lot of improv classes, teaching, and, you know, you've taught, you know, others. What was one or two things that you, like, really took away as you've gone through this journey?
The number one thing is how much joy it brings to people to experience it. And that may be my main differentiator from the typical, stereotypical improv teacher. Most of improv people are thinking about, oh, that's something we go to see. You know, that's something we pay money for. or don't pay money for, and we go see other people do. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it's I'm of the opinion that it's actually best experienced you doing it. It's definitely great to have that experience. It's also great to have that experience where you go through the class and then you do a show in front of an audience, which is a little different than doing a show in the classroom, where you have that feedback from an audience. So the joy that it's brought to people, the light bulbs that go off and then people realize, oh, I can do this. And that's been the part that I think has been the most meaningful and also the most eye-opening. I've also realized that most people can learn to be pretty good at it. There are some people that are going to be more natural at it and they're going to, you know, be superstars in it. But I think most even average people can be decent at improv and have funny scenes and have that confidence to know that what they bring to it matters. It's been very rare I found somebody that hasn't been able to pick up anything. And usually it's because they have that self-dialogue going too strong. You know, they're beating themselves up all the time. Those are the people that have the hardest time with this. But if you can let go and just play and just listen and respond and agree, most people are pretty good at this. And that's been the proudest part of what we've accomplished.
That's definitely the hardest part, is to let go and, you know, let go of knowing and let go of wanting to control things.
Exactly. Yeah. And the people that want to control, the people that want to beat themselves up, they're the ones that are going to have the toughest time for this, but they're also the ones that probably need it the most.
Yeah.
So if they can stick with it long enough to get to that point where they can let go, they'll probably benefit the most from it.
Yeah. When I took my first improv class, I was like, okay, I got to do this again. But it was definitely scary. I'm not going to say that it was comfortable, but that's the idea. I mean, you're trying to stretch your boundaries and let go of the comfort zone. And definitely that's something improv can do very well.
And I think as a coach, I go into it already knowing that you can do this. So I think that's actually one of the things I do best at this, is that I already believe in you. You may not believe in yourself yet, but I already know that you've got it in you. So what I try to do is I try to get people comfortable at first. So the first session, we play a lot. We just play and laugh. I kind of want people to have experienced about an hour of just pure laughter before we start digging into okay, this is how things are put together. And if we can accomplish that, then the rest tends to kind of fall into place afterwards pretty easily. Mm-hmm. Get people out of their heads right at the first.
Yeah, get to this point where you don't take yourself too seriously, right? And then, because that's usually what happens, meetings, organizations, or even like coaching one-on-one, is like people, when they take themselves too seriously, they don't want to try things and they don't want to, let go of control, and then they don't really grow or learn. So yeah, that's, humor can be a way to just laugh at yourself, be more like build the reflexes, right?
Yeah. And it breaks down barriers really quickly. I've done, over the last few years, I've done several workplace workshops where we go in and a lot of times people that have worked together for years, and maybe for the first time, they're seeing the humorous side of that person. You know, the person that's always at the cubicle typing, all of a sudden, oh, wow, they're hilarious. And it's kind of nice to see that. I haven't had the opportunity to go in somewhere after that to see if things changed after that. I'd like to maybe do a study or even just go and sit in for a day somewhere, like maybe a month after we've done a workshop for them, to see what might have changed, see if interactions have changed any. But I imagine it has to, once you've had that, couple hours of just laughing together and being ridiculous together for a little bit instead of focused on work the entire time.
Yeah. So what's an advice that you would give someone who want to try this for the first time?
Try improv. It may be one of the best times to do it right now, because we have free classes going on Zoom a few times a week. However, we do have a tip jar if you want to contribute to that. But also there are other schools and organizations that are doing tryout times. I know Second City's got something. I think Upright Citizens Brigade has something. So everybody's on Zoom right now. So you could get some really good training from some really big names in the improv world without much trouble right now. The main thing is just kind of try something. Go in with no expectations on yourself. Just go in to play and have a good time, and just be open. That's the main thing. Just be open to it.
Yeah, just to go in and play. Let go of expectations. So Dan, that was very insightful. Thank you very much, and really enjoyed.
Thanks for having me.